And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week we're thinking about Hollywood's new blockbuster, Noah.
Noah. What did he say?
He's going to destroy the world.
Remember, Noah, he chose you for a reason.
Darren Aronofsky's new film about Noah and the Ark is already generating controversy among religious believers. Some Islamic countries have banned the movie, and many Christians are also taking a long, hard look, although the Vatican has reportedly given its blessing. One reason the movie's getting so much buzz is that Noah's flood is a pivotal event in the creationist explanation for the origins of life. To find out why, Steve Paulson caught up with the leading historian of creationism, Ronald Numbers, to talk about flood geology and modern creationism.
There's a stereotype that creationists just aren't that smart. I mean, how can you ignore the steady accumulation of scientific knowledge that has shown overwhelming support for evolution? Is this a question of intelligence or of education?
Not fundamentally. There is a slight skewing of anti-evolutionists toward lower levels of education, but it's not huge. They're really dumb creationists and they're really dumb evolutionists. Of the 10 founders of the Creation Research Society, 5 of them had earned doctorates in the biological sciences from major universities. Another had a PhD from Berkeley in biochemistry. And these were not dumb, uneducated people. They were individuals who rejected evolution for religious and, they would say, for scientific reasons.
And yet that's so hard to understand for people who aren't religious. I mean, if you go through the university system, get a graduate degree in the biological sciences, how can you still allow religion to trump science?
They wouldn't see it quite that way. Most people who reject evolution do not see themselves as being anti-scientific in any way. During the 1920s, the primary argument was to say that evolution did not deserve the name of science. It was too speculative. It was too theoretical. They love science. By the 1960s and 70s, the anti-evolutionists had shifted considerably, and the hardest core of them were arguing creationism is scientific. We're advocating creation science.
Given your field of study, you have a particularly interesting personal history. You grew up in a family of Seventh-day Adventists, right?
That's correct. All my male relatives, I believe, were ministers of one kind or another. Both my grandfathers, my father, all my uncles on both sides worked for the church. My brother-in-law is a minister. My nephew is a minister.
So you went through Adventist schools.
I mean, First grade through college.
Through college.
I graduated from Southern Missionary College in Tennessee.
And what did you think about the story of life's origins as you were growing up?
I was never exposed to anything other than what we now call young earth creationism. Creation science, as you may know, came out of Seventh-day Adventism. My father was a believer. All my teachers were believers. All my friends believed in that. I can remember as a college student, I majored in math and physics, and there was a visiting professor from the University of Chicago lecturing on carbon 14 dating. And he was talking about scores of thousands of years. And my friends and I just looked at each other, wincing and smiling. And he didn't know any better. Here he was a prominent astrophysicist from a major university, and he just didn't know the truth.
But at some point, your ideas obviously changed. What caused you to start to question the creationist account?
I wish I knew. There are a few moments that I can identify that proved crucial for me. One was I went to Berkeley in the 60s as a graduate student in history and learned to read critically. Also, I was exposed to critiques of young earth creationism, and the one that stands out in my memory as being decisive was hearing a lecture about the fossil forest of Yellowstone given by a creationist who had just been out there to visit and found that of the 30 or so successive layers, assuming the most rapid rates of decomposition of lava into soil, and the most rapid rates of growth for the trees who came back in that area, you needed at least, say, 20 to 30,000 years. And the only alternative that the creationists had to offer for that was that during the year of Noah's flood, these whole stands of trees came floating in, one on top of another, until you had about 30 stacked up. And that truly seemed incredible to me.
So your beliefs kind of came crashing down at that moment.
Well, the night after I heard that, I stayed up till very, very late with a fellow Adventist graduate student friend of mine, wrestling with the implications of this. And before dawn, we both decided that the evidence was too strong.
What are your religious beliefs now?
I don't have any.
Are you an atheist?
I don't think so. I think that's a belief, that there's no God. So I think the term agnostic would be best for me.
You mentioned that Seventh-day Adventism actually played a crucial role in the history of creationism. An early Adventist laid out the whole idea of flood geology, didn't he?
Exactly. George McCready Price. He was a very smart person, and he wrote a whole library shelf full of books. Price came along in the early 20th century and made the flood the key actor in the history of life on Earth. That is, you have an original creation. It's supernatural. You can't find any evidence of that. But you can study the fossil record. And he tried to show that the entire geological column could have been deposited in about 1 year. And that became the centerpiece of what he called the new catastrophism. And then in about 1970, that view, flood geology, the new catastrophism, was renamed creation science or scientific creationism.
But this is a fascinating history, because you're saying that this whole idea of flood geology was really laid out by George McCready Price in the 1920s.
Correct.
And then it kind of disappeared, or it sort of went underground, and then it was revived again in the 1960s.
In the early 60s, two fundamentalists, a theologian named John Whitcomb Jr. and a hydraulic engineer named Henry Morris, took Price's flood geology, reworked it a little bit, and published it as The Genesis Flood. Notice, the seminal books in the history of creationism have focused on geology and the flood, not so much on biology. And as a result of what Whitcomb and Morris did, Price's views exploded among fundamentalists and other conservative Christians.
But why? I mean, why did this view, which on the surface seems kind of outlandish,
yes,
the idea that Noah's flood would have somehow resolved all of the contradictions within the fossil record, why would that suddenly explode in popularity in the 1960s?
And especially when fundamentalists had two perfectly orthodox interpretations of Genesis 1 that would have allowed them to accept all the paleontological evidence. One was that the days of Genesis represented vast geological epochs, or cosmic epochs even. William Jennings Bryan accepted that. The founder of the World's Christian Fundamentalist Association accepted that.
So in that account, you could have the Earth going back billions of years.
Time was no problem. And another view, very popular among fundamentalists, was called the gap theory. That is, that after the original creation in the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth, Moses, the author of Genesis, skipped in silence a vast period of Earth history before coming to the Edenic creation in 6 days associated with Adam and Eve. So you had these perfectly good interpretations of Genesis available to fundamentalists, which makes your question all the more difficult to answer. Why would they turn their backs at the very time that more and more fundamentalists are becoming educated in the sciences and accept this radical theory that everything was created only about 6,000-7,000 years ago?
Okay, well, I'm willing to bet that you have some explanation here.
The biggest explanation, I think, is that for 100 and some years, Christians had been reinterpreting God's sacred word, the Bible, in the light of new scientific discoveries. And people like Whitcomb and Morris, the authors of the Genesis flood, struck a really sensitive chord when they said, it's time to quit interpreting God in the light of science and start with God's revealed word and then see if there's any model of Earth history that will fit with that.
Because otherwise, science keeps chipping away.
Exactly. At it never ends. It always changes, and it means you're going to have to constantly be reinterpreting God. And it wasn't so much that they invested in the Genesis account as that many of them were concerned about the last book of the Bible, Revelation, which foretold the end of the world. And they would argue, how can we expect people, Christians, to believe in the prophecies of Revelation about end times, which were so near and crucial, when we symbolically interpret Genesis and interpret it away? For many of these people, they felt that if you want people to take Revelation seriously, you have to get them to take Genesis really seriously.
Now, one thing I find curious about your position in all of this is, I mean, you are generally acknowledged to have written the history of creationism, your book, The Creationists. You've been very upfront about your own lack of religious belief. And yet, as far as I can tell, you seem to be held in high regard by both the creationists and by scientists, which I have to say is a neat trick. How have you managed this?
In terms of getting along well with critics of evolution, I haven't gone out of my way to attack them or to ridicule them. I know some of the people I've written about. They're good people. Some of them are smarter than I am, not a particularly high standard, but I know that it's not because they're stupid that they're creationists. I'm talking about all my family, too, who are still creationists. So that easy explanation that so many anti-creationists use, that they're just illiterate hillbillies, doesn't have any appeal for me.
University of Wisconsin historian Ron Numbers is the author of the book The Creationists, and he spoke with Steve Paulson.